Good morning. Court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host for 1 hour of legal entertainment. You got questions? We've got answers. All you got to do is give us a call today at 215-227-2727. I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, Court Radio's one and only, David M. Rappaport.
Good morning.
Hello,
how
Davey.
Are ya?
It was a little chilly out there this morning.
Oh, my car felt that chill. I was under a sheet of ice. I had to warm it up and then scrape just to be able to drive.
Yeah,
it was literally like someone had glazed it with
a block of ice,
sugar on a donut. You know,
and folks, if you're going to be venturing out this morning, it's about 32 degrees in Philadelphia and the surrounding area. And we had some freezing rain last night and slush and sleet, and the roads can be hazardous. So take your speed down a notch or two. Take it easy coming around turns and curves and bends. People put too much power to the car in turns, and the rear end just goes north and you go south.
And what's the key to that when you start sliding? Turn into the way you're sliding.
There you go.
Don't turn away from it, or else you'll start spinning around.
And if you don't have modern-day brakes, then you want to pump them. But if you do, you just want to slam them on and let the anti-lock braking system do its job.
You know, that's something. It's interesting you bring that up. I always I hear a lot of stories about that, because we as drivers aren't really conditioned we're conditioned to pump the brakes. That's what I've been told my whole life, right? And then the advent of anti-lock brakes came about, but no one ever really taught anybody how to use them. So intuitively, you want to just pump your brakes, but you're not supposed to. You're supposed to slam on them.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to do.
If you've got a modern car with anti-lock braking systems, then you do not want to pump.
No.
You just want to press your pedal to the floor.
To the metal, baby.
And let the system do its job. Most newer cars have that, but you have to know your vehicle.
You do. It's a dangerous thing you're taking out there on the road.
There you go. We got some stories for today.
We do.
Let's start with the affluenza defense.
Yeah, this one is.
I thought for sure there was a typo, and it was like the influenza.
Right.
You know, the something happened. He sneezed. And
first of all, it's all made up. It's not even an actual thing. It's this affluenza isn't even recognized by any doctors or anything. But it's the lawyer said a condition where your rich family didn't hold you accountable for anything, gave you everything, so you don't know how to be responsible. So this rich kid basically causes a horrible accident, drunk, and some of the passengers were severely hurt. One of them is paralyzed permanently, could have gotten 20 years, and the judge let him off on probation. No, did he? Yes. Could he have done that?
No, he put him away in a place that costs...
Go ahead.
Will cost his parents in California, a posh California facility... Cost his parents $450,000. There's no locks, no fences, yoga, nutrition courses, and horseback riding classes.
Okay, he got 10 years probation.
Yeah.
And this is that's a private counseling center where he has to go. I don't know if he has to actually live there.
Yeah, wouldn't be so bad, I guess.
Still, it's crazy. This is, if there ever was a, first of all, it's Texas, so, duh.
Yeah, but Texas
expect
usually.
Expect this to happen, right?
Doesn't Texas usually treat people harshly?
Yeah. Yeah, minorities and underprivileged people, but the rich ones are the ones. Yeah.
Okay.
So if this isn't a classic case of telling people that money buys you everything as far as, getting out of responsibility and screwing people, this is it.
215-227-2727. David, we got callers lined up. Let's
already
talk to Monica from Telford, PA. Monica, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
Morning.
What's your question, Monica?
Well, my question is, I'm trying to go through a modification in my home. I had a divorce several years ago, 2010 to be exact. And the bank keeps putting me, like, going around in circles. They always say that I'll qualify for some kind of modification. They'll call me back. Every time we try to call back, I mean, there hasn't been no paperwork. It's been almost 5 years now, and I haven't gotten no correspondence. So I'm very concerned because I've been here in this home for 11 years, and just, you know, the thought about having to move with my four children, it's hard. It's stressful.
Yeah, no doubt, especially around the holidays. We don't need that kind of ag right now. I'll tell you what, there's somebody at my office who's really somewhat of an expert on modifications and what can and can't be done. Why don't you give us a call tomorrow and ask for Billy Hobson. Bill Hobson is our guy at the office who has taken the time to really study the issues involved in modifications. So call us, same number you call us to get into the studio, 215-227-2727. Do it tomorrow morning and ask for Bill Hobson and tell him you got his name from the radio and that you have a modification question.
All right. That sounds wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling Court Radio. Let's talk to Lee from South Philly, who's got a statute question, David. Hey, okay. Lee, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, thank you. What got you up so early today, Lee?
Well, I just got finished taking my wife to work, actually.
There you go. Be careful on those roads. They're treacherous.
Well, for sure.
So what's your question, Lee?
I got pulled over back in 2001. In my glove compartment, they found a bag of marijuana. I had a bag of marijuana in the car. And I went to court. They sent me to court on a snow day. Nobody was at the building or the facility. So I went back home. I never heard from Cherry Hill. This is where it happened at. I never heard from them again. 4 years later, they put a warrant on me, which I just found out last week. That 4 years later, they put a warrant on me. And I want to know how long is the statute of limitations in New Jersey? It's been since 2001. We talked about one bag of marijuana. I would think the statute of limitations would have ran out on it by now.
Well, it may have, but the statute of limitations is an affirmative defense, meaning it isn't like when it gets to a certain point, they just say, hey, Lee beat us on this one. Let's tear it up and throw it away. You got to actually come in before the judge and say, Your Honor, is the statute of limitations expired on this? And so, you know, or have an attorney go in on your behalf and raise the statute of limitations. If the statute of limitations has run, if it's been too long, then they'll dismiss the charges. But you have to take the steps to raise it before the judge who is asking to see you. So it's not something that happens automatically. Secondly, sometimes the statute of limitations is told in criminal matters when they've served you legitimately and they repeatedly serve you and you don't appear. It may not, though. That's a finer question that would require some specific facts about your case and when you got served and how much notice you had, which, you know, we can handle during the week. Give us a call at 215-227-2727. The statute of limitations is 5 years.
Looks like
years.
It's 5 years for indictable offenses.
There you go. 5 years in New Jersey. Oh. So what was the year you were charged?
01, he said, 2001.
Well, then
since 2001, it's been like 13 years, and I'm just recently, because what happened was they took so long to get back in contact with me, I had moved. They never got back in contact with me, so it was actually their boo-boo.
Okay.
Know what I mean? But they try to make me pay for it.
Well, isn't that always the case? But, you know, yeah. again, it isn't going to go away on its own. And what will happen is
right.
You'll get stopped for some dumb thing, And this will pop up, and then you'll be sitting in, you know, jail in Camden County over, you know, a little bag of whatever, you know, smokable stuff you had in your car.
Now here's an interesting thing, though. I don't know how this fits into your situation, sir, but the statute of limitations in New Jersey is frozen if you either flee the police or you're quote-unquote considered on the run. So if there was a court hearing scheduled and he didn't show up and there's a bench warrant, that may be considered on the run type thing?
He moved, you know, if he can demonstrate he moved. I don't think it's an intentional.
I agree.
You know, I think, Lee, I think you're all right. I think you're all right. But here's the but. You can't just ignore it. You got to have somebody answer it for you and show up there.
I just got to go down there. That's what they told me on the phone. I had called down there, and they told me I could come and either turn myself in and bring $500, because that's what it would cost for my bill, or either I would come and ask the judge. I could come up there on a court day and ask the judge to vacate the warrant. Which I don't know how successful that would be.
I wouldn't go there without a lawyer. Yeah. I don't even know if I would go there at all, to be honest with you. But
you know, he may decide to vacate the warrant, or you may be sitting for a little while. You know, and that's the you know, eventually this thing's going to get. I would say the chances are it's going to get dismissed. I just don't know how much pain you're going to go through before that happens. And it's always good to be represented by counsel who will raise those defenses for you rather than yourself. But that choice is up to you, and good luck with it. And if you need us, you can give us a call at 215-227-2727. Lee, take care. Thanks for calling Court Radio, bro.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye now. All right, you know, we're getting hit heavy and hard this already, David. There's other stories in the news.
There's some. There's two really funny ones I have to mention. I'm sorry to say it's funny because it is a tragic thing, but when I heard this, your first reaction is to laugh a little bit. This is in, I don't even know where it is, to be honest with you. I apologize. But the shopping season for Christmas. A man committed suicide in a mall after his girlfriend refused to stop shopping. And this is the best part of it, even though, I mean, it is tragic. This guy committed suicide.
Yeah, I'm not seeing the funny part yet,
David.
Well,
he told her she already had enough shoes, more shoes she could wear in a lifetime, and it was pointless to buy any more. But she said no, and she started screaming at him, and she, you know, wouldn't stop buying shoes. And I guess it just
and
got
he jumped.
Him. I don't know how he...
He jumped.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. He jumped off the top floor of the mall.
Why did people get so crazy over the holidays? I don't understand it.
Well, maybe some of our listeners could tell you. But, you know, it's people's, you know, blood pressure goes up and they start not thinking clearly. Yesterday I was in line at a Toys R Us and there was a woman behind me and she was starting to get agitated. And her boyfriend,
husband, waiting.
I mean, yeah, the waiting.
Right, okay.
Boyfriend, husband was saying, "Listen, honey, the line's moving. Relax, relax." It was like I was watching, you know,
reality TV.
Reality TV.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a psychologist. The boyfriend psychologist was talking his patient down off the ledge.
Did she get more upset or less upset?
He sent her away. I think he said, "You know, go away."
If he wasn't there, she would have freaked out. Right?
Probably. Yeah. You know. Just take a deep breath. It's not that big a deal. And there's always, you can always imagine that life could be a lot worse. And therefore, whatever you're experiencing, really got to keep it in perspective. 215-227-2727.
Let me mention this other one.
Go ahead.
This one, again, I say it's funny. Some people may question whether it's funny, but the natural reaction is to laugh a little bit. At Nelson Mandela's memorial. Obama speaking, and right next to Obama, 3 feet away, is you know, they hire a signer for people who are deaf to hear what, you know, to be able to follow.
Sign language.
Well, this
in,
right.
A person who does sign language.
Well, the guy who was doing it was totally out of it. He says he was hallucinating, and he was just incoherently signing nothing, pretending to sign. Nobody noticed except obviously people who can read sign language. And, you know, for however long he's up there doing it, and there, you know, everyone else is thinking he's fine.
Right. He's just doing a dance.
He was just moving his arms, you know, crazy. And he now says he was hallucinating. I'm sure, you know, who knows what happened to the guy, but You wonder where they hired him from. There's all questions now. Where did they get this guy from?
How
did
he get him? Through? Was he gotten from by South Africa?
A government department of.
Okay. Well, he wasn't. It wasn't an American. That's all I want.
I don't believe so. No, okay. South African.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
We have enough trouble here.
He was schizophrenic. He suffered from schizophrenia.
Well, that's a bad time for that to come out.
Yeah. But anyway, I didn't see it. But it must have been somewhat funny to people who were trying to read the sign language.
All right, let's talk to Rick from Mount Airy. Yo, Rick, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing today?
We're well, thanks. Welcome, and what's your question?
Yeah, I just was released from my job. I was laid off. And my question is, there's a lot of verbiage in this separation letter that I'm concerned about, and I don't want to sign it. Because prior to me being at one hospital here in Philly, they sent me up to New York for three months, working out of a government facility, auditing trays. And on November the 21st, as I was auditing the trays, a dirty instrument jumped up and popped up and cut my ring finger. Of course, they sent me down to the ER, which they checked the host, and he was negative. And I came back home to Philly and got with their doctors, and everything was negative on my end. But my concern is going forward, if I sign this separation letter, like, you know, where's the protection for me and my family?
Well, that's
there's a lot of verbiage in this separation letter that I don't understand.
That's always, you know, something that you have to be mindful of. And you know what? You bring up a good point. When you have documents, you need to sign contracts, and you're not sure what the consequences are. It's always good to see a lawyer and have somebody else help you interpret the contract. And so what you do is you give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727. You make an appointment, you come in, you may spend a little money to have an attorney review the contract for you. It may be money well spent.
It's going to be well spent because I don't understand it. So I need somebody to help me educate me.
There you go. So what you do is you come on in and, you know, somebody at the office will help you review the contract or maybe even, get it faxed over. Typically those contracts will not affect if you have a workers' comp claim, and you are, signing something which severs your employment, but it doesn't provide you with compensation for that claim, then you can always revisit that claim. In Pennsylvania, there's a 3-year statute of limitations on workers' comp claims. So six months from now, if your finger started to get infected and you could tie it back to that incident, or you had some sort of disease process that they went undetected and became detected 6 months from now, probably anything you sign with regard to severance isn't going to waive your workers' comp claim unless it's specifically mentioned and you're compensated for it. But anyway, it's always good practice to have a contract reviewed by an attorney, gives you peace of mind, and makes sure you're protected. So give us a call during the week. We'll be happy to take a look at that for you. 215-227-2727. When you do, give us a call. Ask for Saul. Okay?
Saul?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, take care, bud. Yeah. You know.
Hey, never sign anything that you don't understand.
There you go.
No matter how important it is, you know. I mean, everything.
So, David, we're on to our hot button topic.
What is that?
Well, you know, we have a gentleman who's joining us in the studio. His name is Archie Leacock. Good morning, Archie, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning. Sorry, I'm a few minutes late. Good morning.
Hey, listen.
It's okay.
Rather have you safe and in all in one piece. You know, I was just telling listeners out there how dangerous the roads are, and it's even more dangerous for people who aren't sighted. How did you get here by yourself?
Actually, I didn't. For your audience, I am blind, totally blind, and my assistant with me today, Anthony Carl, he brought me, and we were struggling to get here. The streets are indeed pretty icy.
Yeah, they are. Well, we're glad you got here and got here safely, Archie. Archie is the founder of the Institute for the Development of African American Youth, Inc. Does that have a, is there something shorter that we could say?
Oh, yeah, you can say I day.
I day. I like that.
I day. No one says the whole name except you.
Okay. That's usually the case. Yeah. You know, I'm standing out. I'm an outlier, as they say. Archie Leacock founded I day. What is I day, Archie?
Actually, it's a youth agency, social service agency, and we run about 8 different programs around the city. And a large part of what we do is working with DHS and the court system. 2 of our 8 programs are around young people being placed, being arrested, being served, going to placement, or being, you know, mainstream back into their community and into their homes.
I see. So I have a friend who's a judge in the family court. His name's His Honorable Robert Rebstock. And Judge Rebstock probably places people into your programs.
Absolutely. We know Judge Rebstock quite well.
Yeah. I detect a slight accent. Is this a West Philly or North Philly? Where's that? Where are you from, Archie?
Well, I usually tell people North Philly, but originally, many, many years ago, I came from Trinidad when I was 16. I'm certainly 58 now, so that's a long time ago.
And you've been in Philly all that time?
For the most part.
Yeah, you know. Okay. Well, Trinidad has a very nice accent, actually. It's not, you know, nothing. I wouldn't have known what it was, but I'm happy that you're here today to join us. Because, you know, David and I were talking about the Luzerne County mess and really thought that you would be able to kind of counsel us about that. You know, in Luzerne County, folks, there were a series of judges or a number of judges who were placing children into detention facilities. These were for-profit detention facilities. Somebody was making a buck every time a bed got filled, and the buck was getting passed down to the judge who sentenced them. It was a huge thing. I mean, like, most of the judiciary of Luzerne County went, you know, into the clink over this. And the bigger question, Archie, is are we turning into a society where people, corporations and people are making money on the misery of our children?
And I would clearly have to say yes. To a large extent from what we see. I mean, once you have a system that's driven by profit, you know, and your benchmarks and your successes are according to how many people you serve and to the number you serve, and then people are driven by those numbers. And that's essentially how the system is developed right now. So all along the line, from the very point of having someone arrested and having them placed either into a community service like ours, which is an alternative to placement. And if they don't do well, then they go to placement. Very often you find an incentive to place them because the system considers them difficult or a risk factor, which very often there are many other compounding problems. But I would definitely say it is, and therefore it leads to unfortunate outcomes with those young people. They really don't get the kind of service they need. So we end up benefiting from it financially. But in terms of young people getting those services, in my opinion, the answer is not.
You know, I kind of look at it almost synonymous with on the small scale is like a police, you know, the month that they have to write a certain amount of tickets or they're expected to write a certain amount of tickets and they don't have them in that month. So they set up one of those road things and hide and start writing like 1,000 tickets a day for the 1 or 2 days. And here I could see that happening if you have for profit, like you said. Kids, a certain number of kids, it's driven by the amount of people they serve in the detention center. They look at their numbers, they're a little low. Well, let's start getting kids in here.
How do we do it?
We start looking closer at what they did and do they really need this?
Well, tell me something. Yeah,
it's scary.
It is. It is scary. And what I want to know, Archie, because you're right there firsthand, what kind of behaviors are they targeting that bring kids into the fold?
Well, essentially, I would say about 35% of all the cases in Pennsylvania, and certainly we see a similar around 25% of all young people who come to the program, they're really in the program for really nonviolent offenses, and we can really treat them in the community. So that's certainly evidence-based. What we do find, though, which is interesting, is because a lot of these placements have a large overhead. They have beds, they have facilities, they have classrooms, they have, you know, gym facilities, therapeutic staff. They need to indeed keep them going. So when we get a young person who is picked up, there's a real preponderance, a real need to send them away because there's a whole cartel of these institutions, placement institutions, that are really needing those folks or wanting those folks. And they show up in the form of court reps who are in the court every single day. So as soon as the judge, you know, I said this person needs to go away, you have four or five or six court reps, you know, vying for that person. So it becomes a real difficult situation.
That is scary.
It's like a meat market. Yeah. It's horrible. That's horrible.
You know, I want to find out what you think, because we try to get answers at Court Radio. I want to see what the answer is to avoid this. But before we get there, Archie, we're going to have to take a quick break. Give our listeners a chance to kind of digest what we've talked about. Folks, if you've got questions for Archie Leacock, if you've got comments about what our judicial system is turning into for our juveniles, kind of a meat market, throwing them away and starting them on a path of incarceration and institutionalization, how do we avoid this? What's the answers? Give us a call. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience, from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you've been injured in an automobile accident, you know what matters. Being able to afford medical care, providing for your family while you're out of work, knowing your rights and getting just compensation. These things matter. That's why your attorney matters. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been injured in an auto or truck-related accident, My Philly Lawyer will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. This is Court Radio and I am Dean Weitzman, joined with my co-host, David Rappaport.
Hello.
Hi, David. We're joined in the studio with Archie Leacock, the founder and moving person with regards to an organization that tries to help kids avoid the system, iDay. Hi, Archie.
Hi. Hi, Dave. How are you?
We're doing well, thanks. Dean, David, it's easy to get us confused. Yeah. He was from the far northeast. I was from the lower northeast.
Right. Okay.
He says, bummer. I say, huh? 215-227-2727.
I was from the more sophisticated area.
Yeah. So. The affluent.
Yes.
Right. Greater northeast.
Affluenza would have maybe worked in my...
Yeah. Let's talk to Lisa. Is that right, Lisa? From Chester, PA.
Yeah.
Hi, how are you? You've got a question. We've got an answer. What's up?
Hi. I was calling because my landlord put a judgment on me, but what happened was he gave me and the lady lives upstairs, he gave us some work in the house that he was supposed to do, and he knew about it, and he never did it. So I moved out. But what happened was he gave me, like, a couple eviction notices, and then, but he never took me to court. And finally, he did send a letter for me to come to court. But when he sent the letter for me to come to court, I was in the hospital, so I couldn't come. And when I got out the hospital, I couldn't, the doctor gave me orders not to go back to work or to drive or anything until after I seen my primary doctor. So I called the court, and I told them, I said, well, I was in the hospital, so I couldn't come to court. And I had my, hospital paper to let you show for proof that I was in the hospital. So the lady said, well, are you still on the property? I said, I'm in the process of moving out now. But since I just came out of the hospital, I said, I already have my house, but I haven't gotten everything out yet. She said, okay. She said, well, I'll let the judge know that you won't be able to make it. And that's between you and the landlord. So I said, okay. So I'm thinking I'm going to get another court date. I never got a court date. Instead, I got a judgment put on me.
Right.
So I went over to the court, and I showed them. I said, well, I called the lady, and I told her why I didn't come to court. And I have my papers here showing why I didn't come to court, showing that I was in the hospital. So how can they put a judgment on me instead of giving me a court date?
They can. They did. And, how can they? Well, here's the issue. The issue is when you're not able to get to court, you got to send somebody on your behalf on that day. If you really want to make sure, you got to send somebody, and preferably somebody with maybe a doctor's note or some proof that you're hospitalized. Then you stand a chance. They still could decide the case without you, okay? But you stand a chance of getting it properly set aside for a new date. She never said to you during your conversation, Lisa, we're going to give you a continuance and you'll get a new date in the mail. She never said those words.
No, she just said, I'll tell the judge.
Right. And that's the problem.
The judge said, I don't care.
Right. And now you can get it set aside, but that's going to cost time and money as well. And you're probably not going to be able to do that on your own. It doesn't much matter because on the one hand, you were giving him possession anyway, so you weren't worried about that. And that's fine. But what he did was, in addition to getting possession, he snuck in a money judgment as well. And that's the part now that you're faced with carrying around for the rest of your life, perhaps, if he continues to renew it every 5 years. And if you really wanted to get that money judgment set aside, you'd have to have the judgment opened. And the only way to do that is to file an appeal. I don't know how much time has gone by, but you would need to file. Okay, you have time. So you'd file an appeal to the judge's decision, and then you'd have the judgment set aside, and there would be a new hearing probably listed. So that you can do something about it or not if you choose not to. But that's where you're faced with now. For our other listeners, the important thing here is a conversation is not something that's going to stop a court date.
The other thing I note from here that we've said many times is if you didn't pay rent because the landlord didn't do X, Y, and Z, that may be warranted, but you better have proof that you notified the landlord, that the landlord had a chance to do it. If that was all verbal and you just said, I'm not going to pay, chances are if you had gone to court, you would have lost anyway and had a money judgment. Because whatever time you're in the property, and if you're still in there, you said you were getting your stuff out, you have to pay to be in there unless someone tells you you don't, like a court or the landlord agrees, in writing. You don't have to pay for this because we're going to fix X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, you escrow account everything.
Yeah.
All right, Lisa, thanks for calling Court Radio. Good luck with your issue.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, we got Tiffany on the line from Southwest Philly. Tiffany, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well, thanks. You got a comment or question about our hot button topic with Archie Leacock?
I don't have a question. I was calling in about the children, keeping them out the juvenile system.
Yeah. Well, what do you got to say about that?
Well, I don't always think it's a bad thing. I'm 25 years old. I was in the juvenile system. I did 23 months in the juvenile system, and it actually turned out best on my behalf.
Okay.
Because when I was a kid, I didn't have a lot of people that could listen to me. I was angry as a child, and I went into the juvenile system. I did a couple things that were I shouldn't have done. And I went into the juvenile system. I came out when I was 17, going on 18. I haven't been back, you know, to jail or anything like that. I still have the staffs in my life, and every time I'm angry, I think about the things that they have said to me or taught me, and it turned out better for me in my life.
You're a success story, and that's wonderful.
What do you have to say about that, Arch?
I mean, I think that's a great idea. In fact, I met with a young man last night who was telling me that certainly placement has pluses and minuses. But my big question is not whether or not a young person does well or doesn't do well in placement. It's two things that really drives me with the system, and that's why I have difficulties. One is the cost. We can probably have done the same thing in the community, much cheaper and more effective, and develop a real linkage for our caller at a much cheaper price. We're talking about $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 for some placements on average. Some of them get even higher than that. And then we're also talking about having a criminal record for a long period of your life. And when we look at the folks who are in the criminal justice system, easily four-fifths of them are African-Americans or minorities. So we're looking at a system on three major points for me that is skewed. And I'm concerned that my final overall concern is that the court system and the juvenile justice system is not the place to discipline and raise our young people. That's just not the place. That is where we are today, unfortunately, but that's not the place that we need to do that.
All right. Okay. Tiffany, thanks for giving us a call, and thanks for voicing your opinion. We appreciate it here at Court Radio. Have a great Sunday.
Okay,
all right. Line two, Sherman, another Southwest Philly. Everybody's awake in Southwest today. Hey, Sherman, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, good morning to you too. I'm a formerly convicted individual, and I have firsthand experience with that system. And a lot of your callers are right and exact. It is for profit. Several years ago, it used to be about rehabilitation. Now the system has become about industrialization. And when you look at what the taxpayers have to fork out every year, somewhere around $33,000 to $35,000 per inmate that's housed, as opposed to giving the guys a job and fixing the infrastructure.
Yeah.
And on the streets like Philadelphia, the streets are horrendous. They can give them jobs and pay them $20,000 and save the taxpayers $15,000. But what we have is legislation that says, you don't have to hire guys. The taxpayer pays for vocational training for guys upstate. And guys get out with that training, and they still can't get a job. So now you leave them with their backs up against the wall, and, you know, they got to eat like everybody else wants to eat. Some of them have the same aspirations and dreams that people who legally attain those goals. But they can't attain those goals because they don't have the wherewithal or the means to do it because they're discriminated against. And that's just part of this system. But, again, the profiteering is just basically getting out of hand now.
Sherman,
I was reading about in Texas, they had a situation where the legislator over there, they were actually passing bills, right, that enabled them, right, to make more arrests. The sheriff's department in Texas to make more arrests, because if they didn't make the arrests, the contracts they had with these private prisons, right, called for them still to have to pay the prisons whether they filled the bids or not. So if they were supposed to fill 5,000 bids and they only filled 2,500 bids, they still had to pay for the 5,000. And that's
right.
What that is an incentive for them to try to incarcerate more people unnecessarily.
That's what I was saying before. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the system seems like it's broken. Question is, Archie, what is it that you save the people from a financial standpoint? Like if it's $30,000, $35,000 to incarcerate, what's the cost to do it through iDay?
Well, for ID specifically. Now, there are a group of organizations like us doing this kind of work. But for ID, it roughly costs the city, I would say, under $2,000 a year per juvenile in our system. So to send them to our system, $2,000, and we get, what, roughly 26 plus another 16, just over 40 per month that we are working with, and they can stay with us as long as up to 4 months. So it's every quarter. So you're really looking at almost 120, 150, but we're looking at about $26 a day under $2,000. I mean, we're talking marginally much less than $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 of incarceration.
Right. I would also think that one of the other things that the caller had said, and it's true with what you're doing, is because you're in the community and the kids are in the community doing this, the community's aware of it, they don't have that stigma of being quote-unquote institutionalized. And as he said, even if they're trained, they come out, no one wants to hire them because they have a record, because they've been away. Let's say here they're in the community. And so when they stop or they go seeking maybe employment and they're done with the I-Day program or something like it, they can find things to do, find jobs and
right.
find
right. We
opportunity.
Right. We connect them with those things. That's what
right.
we do.
Right.
We have them calling every single night for curfew call. We go to the school every day. We go to their homes once a week. We really keep track of them and build a relationship with their families. They get much more, and whatever, you know, needs they have, like drug treatment, or then they're not doing well in school. We address right. all of those concerns. Versus if you go to a placement, which is part of the crisis of the entire system, they send you away for a gun charge or marijuana charge. You get no service in placement.
Well, here's what I don't understand: all the money that's being spent for the incarceration, why wouldn't they put that money towards your type of like that's where the money should be spent, right? I mean,
well,
you think about it.
Objectively, that's where the money should be spent.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a whole, you know, cartel of
right
of
institutions, the corporations,
and
yeah.
You know, you're dealing with a lot of very sharp people who go to school, they're
right,
lawyers,
right.
they're MBAs,
hey,
and they're working.
Hey,
lawyers,
oh,
wait
right,
a minute.
Right, right, right. I mean, you're really talking
no,
about them, you know, and then it becomes a larger question because now you're petitioning the state legislature,
right.
You're talking about the city council, you're talking about the mayor, the DHS commissioner. You're now really dealing with these folks, and you're talking about votes, and
right.
I mean, it gets very complicated. And the folks who lose out are the folks who don't vote, are the folks who are less educated
right.
and less with, you know, with the know-how on how to make the system. So actually, it's a bad business to begin with.
Yeah, let's talk to, we have a caller on the line who's been through the system. He's ex-offender, Wayne Jacobs. Hey, Wayne, welcome to Court Radio.
Yes, good morning.
You know, Wayne, you're the founder of Ex-Offenders for Community Empowerment. What is that organization and what do you do?
All right. Well, we are truly a formerly convicted organization. And what I mean by that is that myself, I'm one of the co-founders. I'm a formerly convicted person, an incarcerated person.
Were you? Did you get, Wayne, did you get in the into the system as a child?
Yeah, I started out as a child. My organization is a proactive organization. We primarily focus on legislation that prevent formerly convicted people from successfully reentering back into the community. We also focus on stopping the illegal transfer of guns into the hands of the unauthorized. We also focus on the issue of voting. Those are the things.
Yeah, we were just talking about voting and how those who don't vote get left by the wayside. I have a question. You know, we were working with Jordan Harris, state representative, to bring to light some legislation that would make it a little easier for folks to get their records expunged. What's the process, Wayne, for a teenager to get his record expunged right now?
Well, in order for a teenager to have his record expunged, the offense that he was adjudicated has to be a nonviolent offense. Any other offense other than a nonviolent offense, he would have to get a pardon, such as aggravated assault, simple assault, possession of a handgun. Those kind of offenses you have to get a pardon for.
So the idea that juveniles can get anything expunged is not true, and getting a pardon is not all that easy. In fact, it's probably next to impossible. And so you've got a host of offenses, violent offenses that can be, that were adjudicated by a court that a juvenile participated in, and those offenses will follow him for life.
Well, you say violent, but you know, some of them are violent. Simple assault, I'm not so sure, you know, is that violent, and it's probably very prevalent. No, I mean, it's considered violent, but as far as the category. But I can see so many situations, you know, with children where they could be charged with simple assault. And it was, you know, I mean, kids getting into an altercation, it happens. Doesn't have to sit with them for the rest of their life, though.
One is that, you know, most times this whole thing starts at charging. You know, you can arrest Afro-American youth and a white youth for the exact same offense. Okay, the exact identical offense. They will charge the Afro-American youth with a felony, where they would charge the Caucasian with the misdemeanor.
Well, look at the story we did earlier in Texas. The kid killed four people.
What that means is that let's just say, if you're charged with an aggravated assault, and they come with a deal and say, "Well, you plead guilty to a simple assault,"
right?
Right, that's still an assault.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
you know what I mean. Whereas, you know, with when they arrest you and give you a misdemeanor, then you can possibly negotiate for that to be a summary offense.
That you bring up a good point, Wayne. And one of the last things I want to touch base with you on is the message: think before you act. Well, you know, how do you keep yourself out of the system in the first place so that you're not one who has to look for the deal for the felony versus the misdemeanor versus the summary offense? How do you keep yourself out in the first instance?
Well, I think the very first thing that anybody should do is, you know, you have to have alternative information. Most times, people are only operating with the information that they have in their head. And a lot of folks don't even know the first thing about the law. They think they know the law, but they don't know the law. And so what do? They go out and do something real crazy, not realizing, you know, that this is very serious. They're thinking it's not serious, but it's serious. And once they made that decision to go do whatever they're going to do, then they have to pay the consequences, and they have no idea of what the consequences may be.
Yeah, unfortunately, my opinion is, and here at Court Radio, that really is the most important opinion. My opinion is that so much of what brings us before the criminal justice system has to do with the abuse of alcohol and drugs. And the kids and adults and everybody that's involved, just addiction is what's killing us as a society, and the longer we take to deal with that in a constructive, rehabilitative fashion, the longer we are going to continue to slide down kind of, you know, life's scale here, and the more people that are going to be incarcerated. It's estimated that 80% of those who are incarcerated, juveniles, adults, all of us, have something to do with drugs, alcohol, and addiction. I mean, you know, it's a disease, folks. If we don't deal with that disease, it will deal with us. I want to thank you, Wayne, for joining Court Radio. We're going to have to run, take a quick break here for our sponsors. We'll be right back. Wayne, yes. You've been a great
like
help.
Say, Archie, I'll be calling you next week.
Please do. I'll be awaiting.
All right, okay. Wayne. All be right. Well. Right, take Archie. Care. Thanks. All right. Folks, we'll be right back. 2 minutes coming.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If your child suffered a birth injury, you know what matters. Getting proper medical care, counseling and assistance, knowing your rights, and getting just compensation to provide for your child's future matters. That's why your attorney matters. My Philly Lawyer is ready to fight relentlessly for you and your child. Call 215-227-2727. Choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting compensation you deserve. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Hey, 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 welcome back. It's Court Radio, and I'm Dean Weitzman, joined by my co-host, David Rappaport.
Good morning.
Good morning, David. For the listeners just tuning in, we're joined with our friend Archie Leacock, who's the founder and chief operating officer of iDay, an organization that wants to try to help help the youth of Philadelphia and surrounding area avoid the criminal justice system in an institutionalized fashion, dealing with these kids outside in their homes and in their community. I have a caller on the line, Susan Logan. Susan from Logan. Sorry, Susan. Welcome to Court Radio. Oh, Susan.
Hello. Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Welcome to Court Radio. You have a comment or question about what we're talking about?
Well, regarding the comments about prison population and prison for profit, we have a man running for governor by the name of John Hanger, who plans to completely legalize marijuana, who plans to do away with the privatization of prisons and the fact that 10 times African Americans go to jail for drug offenses as opposed to Caucasians, even though Caucasians use drugs just as much as African Americans. He speaks to the issues that plague us in Pennsylvania. And I'm saying, if you want to make change, you have to go out, register, and vote. And if you want changes that's going to affect your, benefit your community, you should go out and vote for John Hanger.
Well, there okay. You go. John just got himself a plug on Court Radio.
But I mean, the bigger point for us, and this goes to what Archie was saying too, is that people have to be informed on issues and vote for those that help their community. I agree with her statement about that. Whether that's the particular individual, you have to do your research.
Yeah,
we don't know, but certainly
we could say that Court Radio doesn't endorse support John Hanger. I don't know him.
We don't know his issues yet.
Yeah, he could be the greatest thing since sliced bread, as they say, in the Oxford Circle.
Yeah, okay.
Or he could be a villain. You know, we just don't know. But anyway, thanks for calling us and making your opinion known. It seems to me that While in reality, it often turns into, and we were saying this while we were off the air, it often turns into an African-American, Caucasian kind of split. I mean, there are disproportionately more African-Americans in the system than Caucasians. I think it comes down to a financial, a class issue. I think that there are more African-Americans who are not well off, who are poor, and therefore have to rely upon the system, don't have the education. And in some ways, you know, if you're African-American, but your parents went to Penn Charter and you've Penn and they've got master's degrees, you're going to be treated way, way differently than your parents who didn't graduate high school and are still living in North Philly.
Well, like we were saying, it's not really a race issue. It's a, I think the way you explain it more than what you were saying is it's a concentration issue, meaning there are a lot more African-Americans in Philadelphia. We're talking about inner city now, right? So it just goes by logic that there's going to be more African-Americans incarcerated because they're the majority. And the majority, unfortunately, of any inner city is not the affluent majority. They're always, you know, the common folk.
Here's the bottom line.
Common folk are, you know.
The system seems to me to be broken.
Yes.
And it seems to me that from children to adults, we're not dealing with what brings them into the system, which is addiction to drugs and alcohol. That's, you know, if you're not getting the right message at home and your parents are getting high all the time, you don't have good role models, you start getting high, you deal with stressors in life in that fashion rather than in a productive way, and you get bad results starting to happen. How does I-Day deal with that component? How do you help people who really are addicts?
Well, we certainly have, we don't do the drug treatment ourselves, but we certainly have organizations that we link with, and then they're supervised. We have our social workers, our monitors, our case managers who go to these services with our young people to make sure they are going. We just don't take their word for it. We go with them. We monitor what they're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, you can't take their word for it. Let me tell you, addicts, they lie about everything.
I gotta take exception to, I don't agree with you, Dean, that that's the main issue, the addiction. The issue is not addiction. The issue is education and opportunity. So when you're in the inner city, let's say, and you have a group of young people, now some of them may be on drugs, but mainly it's they have nothing to do. They don't have people at home, parents, who are pushing them to go to school. They're not educating them in the house. They're just left to their own devices. So they're going to get into, quote-unquote, trouble doing things. One of the troubles might be drugs, but one of the troubles might be just going around, you know, breaking into stores or something or doing something. It's not just addiction. That's not the main problem.
Well, I would never say just, but I do say it is the main problem.
And I'm not so sure.
That's where we can agree to differ, David.
What do you say, Archie?
Well, I come down to the middle.
Okay.
voice of reason.
What I tend to think is the larger problem. Look, we'll always have folks in our prison system for good reasons or bad reasons. But I think for juveniles, what the system doesn't understand is young people up until, the 18, 19, 20, 21, what we find with them is that they're doing their greatest developmental activities during that time with their brain, their behaviors, finding out who they are, what they want to be.
Right.
And therefore, they're much more risk-taking and therefore much more prone to this kind of behaviors that we're talking about that will get them arrested. Now, we find police officers arresting people for one and two bags of weed. This is ridiculous. A police officer who gets trained, we spend that much money in getting people educated in North Philly, around our city, arresting people for a ridiculous one or two bags of weed. I'm not saying I'm pro-weed, but let's find the violent young individual, young or old, who is doing this kind of work, but not when you have a good 35% doing nonviolent activities, but then you have a concentration of your police officers addressing this. It's absolutely ridiculous. Then we criminalize their behavior, and then we make it into a permanent situation where it becomes impossible for them to go and get a job.
Yeah, once they travel down that path, Archie, right. There's yeah. no...
And that's where I find we have a real problem. I don't mind arresting them, but then you're going to make me forever unable to get a job, get a college loan, do something. Now you're talking about a real problem.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We've got a break. We've got to leave with another edition of Court Radio. I want to thank you all for listening, joining us, participating in the process. Archie Leacock for iDay, thank you for being here. And we'll see you shortly, my friend.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
All right.